This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Two Girls, One Ship, the podcast where we analyze, rate, and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer. I'm Genesis, the girl who has experienced the blood weave and has noticed more details that I absolutely adore.
I'm kind of jealous. I need to do that playthrough. And I'm Vervada, the girl who just got to Act 3 on my Dark Urge run. Can't wait to get Oren's outfit. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Alright, it's fun. It's not good armor, though. I wish it was a camp outfit and not an armor, because the stats aren't very good.
Shoot. I mean, I can tell looking at it that it's not a good armor, but yeah.
They just don't fit any of my characters for, like, what I need stats-wise, but it might for yours. Who knows? So, if you're new here, welcome to the beautiful chaos, and stick around for the mid-break, too. I have some updates from last week that I am dying to talk about. You should also know that our podcast centers on character and romance analysis and doesn't shy away from exploring the fun of fucking.
Or from the deep emotional connections built between two or more characters using specific in-game dialogue. So if you want to stay spoiler-free, then this is not the podcast for you.
So here's your fucking spoiler alert.
Thanks for the spoiler alert, N7. And just like with all of our previous episodes, we'll assume that you have some background knowledge of the game and character in question. But we will be providing context for those of you who may be unfamiliar.
Today, we are still in Faerun. For another 2 weeks or so, we'll still be in Faerun. But the bright sunny skies of the Sword Coast are new to you. You are a drow from the Underdark, specifically the city-state of Menzo Berenzin, also called the City of Spiders. You have survived your well-defined and privileged life so far by being stronger and fiercer than your sisters and your mother. Your society emulating the viciousness of Loth, the Spider Queen goddess who blessed your race with evil gifts befitting dark elves. You are evil, of course. But can one really be evil when there's no concept of good? Morality is a framework built around culture, and your culture is simply dangerous. You were once a paladin in service to Loth, but now you serve a new god. Your oath of vengeance remains. Just the why and the who has changed. How long shall you let others tell you who you are, Minthara Bainray of Baldur's Gate 3?
I am a daughter of Menzo Berenzin's most ancient and powerful house, the Bainray. I lived a life of privilege and danger. My home was at the tallest point of Gwel Arzol, the place of the nobles, a plateau high above the city's sprawl. I enjoyed every luxury, whether harvested in the Underdark or stolen from the surface, and I survived my first assassination attempt while I still suckled at my mother's breast. I tasted her blood that day. She covered my body with her own, and a blade bit deep into her chest, almost puncturing her heart. When I came of age, she tried to take my life herself. And I gave her fresh scars to match those she earned protecting me.
So that sounds fun. Nice mother-daughter bonding moment there. Now, if you haven't guessed it, the drow, or the dark elves from the Underdark, are a matriarchy. Not in the sense that they are women benevolently ruling in a collectivist and equitable way. Oh no, this is the way of the spider, the way of the shark, where your children fight for the right to survive, and even them you may not deem them worthy. The high noble houses of Menzoberranzan are run by the matron mothers, the high priestesses in service to Loth, and their daughters and other female members of the house also served politically. The sons and male members of the house were little more than bodies used for whatever purposes they were best suited to, whether that was a house mage, a soldier, or simply a little plaything. Males never held any political power or authority.
Yeah, before me as a feminist gets too excited, this society doesn't sound fun either. So this is not like the opposite of a patriarchy or anything. This is rather just the women are in charge rather than men. It's horrible. It does not sound fun to me. So Minthara lived fiercely and dangerously, but also comfortably, as this was the life she was used to. She understood her place in Drow society as a highborn daughter with power and influence. She fought as a paladin, drawing power from her oath of vengeance against those who would betray Loth. And then one day, some cultists came knocking. Would Minthara perchance like to hear about our Lord and Savior, the Absolute? No. She gut them and hung their corpses in her garden. But as they decayed, she decided, how dare they intrude on this land? How dare they seek to undermine the Spider Queen herself? Part of it was curiosity, but part of it was her oath simply demanding that she trace their path to whatever place these cultists came from. She brought good, strong, but male warriors with her and made her way to Moonrise Towers.
She expected a battle against the cultists, but instead she was met with a lavish feast befitting a mother matron. Kethric Thorm was expecting her and invited her to feast with him and his collaborator, Orin the Red. He flattered her, knowing just how to speak to Minthara's pride and confidence. Now, at some point during this false talk of an alliance, Orin grew impatient. She got on the table and skipped her merry way towards Minthara, slicing the throats of her warriors as she went. Orin said, "I want this one." And as fast as you could say, "Ball, babe," Minthara was taken down to the Tadpooling Center, and she was made a thrall in service to the Absolute. Minthara was made into a tool, forced to kill under orders from the Netherbrain, aka the Absolute. And Orin brainwashed her, telling her that she was special, chosen as a true soul. Minthara became a zealot, mostly because of the tadpole, but also because Minthara has a space inside of her that she seeks to fill by external means. Yeah, she does. But her sense of self is determined by who she fights for. And when you meet her, she is not herself at all, but is fighting for a fake god.
I'm sure we all know what Minthara's like when we first meet her in Act 1. But until very recently, the only people who could find out what she's like outside of the direct control of the Absolute would be people who sacrificed the Grove and partied with the goblins. That is a pretty evil path just to get one character, considering doing this will make Karlach and Will leave your party, and maybe even Gale, unless you can persuade him. Minthara isn't even, like, that evil. She's, like, neutral evil or even lawful evil at best. And when she gets her mind back, she will question a player character who kills the Grove, saying that she was not in control of herself, but you were. So why did you commit such needless violence? They've thankfully added in an option to recruit her without doing this in subsequent patches, but Minthara is still pretty bugged overall. Hopefully it'll get better as they keep on hotfixing and patching. So in this episode, we're going to talk about the romance as if it plays out unbugged. So your options beyond being evil to recruit Minthara now include knocking her out in Act 1, but specifically knocking her out when she is only temporarily hostile, aka outlined in yellow. If she is hostile, or outlined in red, it won't work. Trust me, I tried. I messed up. And now I have to play the game a third time to get her. There used to be a wild workaround also, known as Sheep Thara, which my sister did, took her 5 hours, which involved polymorphing her into a sheep, but that is no longer necessary, and honestly, if you had done that, it was very buggy in and of itself. So, jumping right ahead, the only sex scene for Minthara currently is one that occurs during Act 1, and later on in the game. She will say that she was still under the thrall of the Absolute. So I didn't really like that. Like, I want the actual romance after she is unthralled from the Absolute to have a scene with her under her own free will. But we promised to talk about what all video game romance has to offer, so we're gonna get into a very early on and very erotic scene with Minthara.
Yeah. Normally, I have to wait until after the mid-break to pull this out, but strap in. It's a wild ride.
You are here. Good. Come with me. Now, lie down. Against yours flashes into your mind. Do not speak. Just do as I say. You learn fast. Your obedience will make this more enjoyable for both of us. Tell me what you want, and you shall have me. As your bodies lock together, so do your minds. Her whole being is laid bare before you. And half hidden at the center of her desire, you discover something unexpected. Fear.
The first time I experienced this scene firsthand was with a female Tav. So I'll go with that breakdown first. And then talk about the very much appreciated differences between a female and a male Tav. This is the only scene that I get that is like this, so of course I'm going to talk about it. Now Minthara beckons you to follow her and is quite pleased to see that you will take her up on her offer of a night of passion. The both of you quickly undress, and as you sit on a dais devoted to the Absolute, your legs are slightly spread, just enough for Minthara to stand with one of your knees in between hers. A quite sensual massage to those sensitive elven ears is where this scene starts. As you caress her face with your left hand, she quickens the pace by clearly moving your right hand off of her hip and directly in between her thighs. Her head falls back in pleasure, and then the scene fades to black. I expected it to end here. Oh, do we have much more to talk about, lovelies? When the camera returns, you two are lying on the dais, with Minthara being the big spoon to your little spoon. Hip to hip, she reaches in between your legs, returning that previous favor. After several long seconds of this hand motion of rubbing, she turns your hips so she can get on top of you, to straddle you on your upper thighs. She reaches her hand into your core, and with thrusting motions, she continues to work you over. Your pleasure evident on your face. Minthara decides that that's not enough. She wants to get as much as she is giving. She crawls back up your body, swings one of her legs over your face, knees to your shoulders. And now, in a true and vivid 69, it fades to black. Honestly, this is the closest scene to a legitimate softcore porn I have seen in a video game since Cyberpunk. While you don't see any penetration that would lead it to be actually classified as actual pornography, you see everything but. I need a cigarette, a fan, and a sip of this wine before I now switch over to a male tav. Because while things are similar, there are enough differences that I think they need to be stated. A male tav, a masculine body, or even a male origin character. The scene starts out the same. The sexy little ear stroking, and the same beginning body position. The same right arm being led to pleasure her. But after the fade to black, it comes back instead of being hip to hip lying down. Your man is still sitting on the dais, and Minthara is on her knees, with your hand wrapped around the back of her head, clearly giving you an amazing blowjob, if the thrown back head of Tav is any indicator. And I'm sorry, there is a look on this man's face that hits a button. He looks down the length of his body at his woman on her knees, and darling, At one point, you wrap your left leg around her shoulder, and she uses that leverage to lift and twist you by the hips, so that way now you are flat on your back. She then slings her leg over your hips and gracefully sits down, plunging you directly into her core. In this reverse cowgirl position, she rides you up and down. Minthara knows exactly what she is doing. The arch of the back and the bracing of her hands at your sides. But she wants even more. She decides to turn around so that way she can kiss you and look into your eyes while she continues to grind on your hips. Is that hair pulling I see in the fade to black? Why, Tav, I think it is. Are you attempting to tame this woman? That isn't going to happen. Let the fire stoke and build. Oh, V, my darling, I don't know how we stumbled onto the hottest and sexiest sex of all sex as our last companion romance. Honey, I might need a minute to recover.
A minute to smoke a cigarette and take a breather.
Exactly. I can go for round two, but just give me a minute, babe.
I watched both scenes, and I did not know that that was how it went. It was like my brain wanted to use the word jump scare, but I wasn't scared. I just was not expecting it because the other scenes were so suggestive and fade to black that to see as much as we saw with Minthara was like almost shocking. Like, I just didn't expect it because literally no one else comes close to the amount that you see.
No, this is like legitimate sex. I could easily see this as like the starting to a softcore or something along those lines. Astarion in his ascended scene definitely gets close to this, but nowhere near the same length of time that is spent on this.
Yeah.
Gale's weave scene is a full 3 minutes long, but it's way more sensual and implied to me than this scene. This is just like legitimate, just straight up sex. And not necessarily like straight sex, because you can also be a woman with Minthara as well. But it's just sex.
Yeah. I would argue, honestly, that I know everyone's player sexual, but I really feel like Minthara is much more of a lesbian. I know she can have sex with a male, but like when she talks about her past lovers, they tend to all be female. And so I kind of just view her with that sexuality, even though everyone's player sexual, like I said.
I feel like that's a little bit more societal, though. She's more likely sex with somebody who is her equal rather than having sex with a man, because apparently that's probably only going to be for like breeding purposes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Nope. I agree. So, yes, this scene, whilst it is long and detailed, it is not romance, really. It is just sex. It's great sex, apparently. I did think it when I watched the scenes. I thought it was interesting that the other badass female companion, who also comes from a dangerous meritocracy, just also had their quote-unquote "this is just sex" scene in the same spot of camp, like that rundown stone tower. And also the fact that you are on the dais, like this altar, it's like some sort of religious feeling. Like, it looks like an offering in a way, like you guys are offering your passion to the Absolute or something, because you have to remember at this part of the game, she is still under the Absolute's control. She is still a believer. She has not yet been given her free will back. So after this scene, Minthara will tell you that she'll see you at moonrise and you will part ways until then. The next time you see her is in the throne room at Moonrise Towers. She is begging for mercy as Kethric Thorm commands her to be taken to the dungeon for failing to find the artifact that you so happen to have in your pocket. This is also the next time you see her if you knocked her out and saved the grove. So Kethric's like, you can decide her fate, and you have to save her if you want to romance her. There are two cultists down there trying to break her mind, which you can help them do if you want to be horrible. But we're not going to do that because we're romancing her. Once you break her out of the Moonrise dungeon, she will join your camp and be completely different to the Minthara we came to know in Act 1. I think it's very obvious exactly how much she was being controlled just by the shift in her voice. She sounds so different to me.
Thank you for allowing me to come here and for bringing me back to myself. Each memory that returns to me is more disturbing than the last. The things that I did in the name of the Absolute. The things that were done to me. They broke my mind. While our tadpoles live and the cult have the means to control them, we will never be safe. We must eradicate them. Starting with General Thorm. I mean Kethric. My deference to him is a habit that will die hard, I fear. Swear that you will keep me close until the Absolute is dead. at least. Rest well, and keep your wits about you. Tomorrow, we go to war with the cult of the Absolute.
Hells yeah. Oath of Vengeance, here we come. So, nothing much happens with Minthara during Act 2 of saving her until you defeat Kethric Thorm. Minthara's personality, now freed of control by the Absolute, is still ruthless and cunning, but her violence and aggression are tempered. Minthara approves of displays of power and efficient, if not violent, solutions to problems, and respects those with the strength to follow their own path. Minthara disapproves of compassion, any form of benevolence without personal gain, and senseless violence. At one point, she will comment that she doesn't fear much, but she does fear Orin. And Orin is the definition of senseless violence. She also despises any worship of Loth or other gods. For instance, thinking Shadowheart is wasting her precious talents in service to Shar. As you earn approval with Minthara and get closer to her, she will admit that much of her anger towards the cult stems from them exploiting her desire to belong by using her as a mindless tool and giving her a false purpose.
I will say there are two notable exceptions in Act 3 to her disapproval of benevolent acts. The first one being if Scratch was given to the abusive kennel master in Wraithwind. I never found the abusive kennel master. Anyway, if you give Scratch to him for whatever reason, she will approve if you save the dogs from him and get Scratch back. Like, while Scratch is gone, if you have her throw his ball, she'll say, "Who do I have to kill to get Scratch back?" So cute. And she also will approve if you help Yenna the child when she says she hasn't seen her mum in a 10-day. But back to Act 2 for now. Minthara will find her zest for life again after you defeat Kethric Thorm. I mean, obviously, gets the blood running hot, right? This is a great victory, but merely a first step. We know from a narrative point that we need to gather all 3 Netherstones to defeat the Netherbrain, and the other 2 are in Baldur's Gate. Gortash has 1, Orin has the other. To any other companion, Orin is simply a scary child of Baal who probably should be killed on principle, and she may have also posed as one of them and kidnapped them. Sorry, Helsin, or Lazel, or maybe Gale, or even the Minthara. But to Minthara, it's personal. Orin is not just a daughter of Baal, but someone who made it personal with Minthara, so now she has to make her vengeance personal. Minthara will take just a moment to revel in your victory against Kethric, however, before urging you onward to the next step in your war against the Absolute.
I will never tire of sitting on dead men's thrones. My blood ran hot when we broke Kethric's bones together. But we have greater challenges ahead of us. It is clear now that he was not working alone. During my time in the cult, I came to know one of his co-conspirators all too well. Baal's blood letter. Orin. To think, I thought her to be speaking for the Absolute. I worshipped that woman. When I first visited Moonrise, I stood before the Absolute in awe. It was more of an idea than an entity. Pure love. Total power. Orin was by my side. She told me that God had chosen me to be a true soul. Blessed and adored. Now I know that those memories are lies. was no god. Orin held me down in a cocoon of flesh, while a mind flayer forced a parasite into my brain. And she laughed at my fear. I will find her. I will murder her. And I will smile.
Minthara, you may have forsworn the gods. But Genesis, the goddess of passionate vengeance, sees you and accepts you into the fold. That delivery of that line, "and I will smile," was so good. So good. Now, Minthara's upbringing in a social Darwinist matriarchal society not only makes her a misandrist, but also a schemer. She knows the way to security is the acquisition of power. Drow society routinely shoots themselves in the foot with their infighting and constant upheaval. So of course Minthara defaults to her familiar formula of violence plus purpose equals the next right thing. It's not enough to simply get revenge on Orin. We need to eradicate the entire cult. Wipe the absolute from this plane of existence. And take its place of power for ourselves. Why, you ask? Never tell Minthara the odds.
What I propose is nigh on impossible, but if anyone can succeed, it is us. We have the prism, and we have the courage to slay gods. We may fail, but we must try. The power of the enslaved Elder Brain could reshape the world. We could reshape the world. And then we will need no gods. We will be their equal. We will be absolute. We have a purpose and a bond. By my oath, I will fight with you while that purpose holds.
Oh my god. Okay. Honestly, Minthara could get me to do some crazy shit. Like, I am not one to want to conquer the world or anything. Like, I want peace and love and all that. But the way her voice, the way Minthara speaks, lights a fire in my soul. It is undeniable. I would join her cult so fast. So fast. But before we can breach the cold shell of this mildly defrosting ice queen into her warm center, we need to take a mid-break to listen to some fun facts, hear from various sponsors of the show, and of course thank our patrons.
Mid-break dance. Okay, so the first dance that started with an M that popped in my head was the Macarena. I don't know if I can see Ms. Minthara doing a Macarena
dance.
I think that's the style of music, but
that's
a marimba.
I was wondering.
A mambo, maybe. A marimba is an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Manipuri.
A mid-break dance just on its own.
The moonwalk. The moonwalk is also a dance that starts with M. A Macarena-ing moon dance into the mid-break with Minthara. Yeah. Oh, the merengue. Ooh.
Okay.
We have lots of M dances to get to. And some ones as well. That was bad. I'm sorry. I'll move on. Minthara is voiced by Emma Gregory, who's done extensive work as a voiceover artist and as an actor. She is also a prolific audiobook narrator. So go ahead and look at her list of books if you can't get enough of Emma.
I feel like if her tone shifted from world domination to soothing, I would fall asleep really easily. Like, she would just calm me. So next fact is about drow overall. So drow have an interesting relationship with their children, if you didn't gather that from the first clip that we played in this episode. On some level, they recognize that there is a need for children as the future of their race. But the vulnerability of young drow actually led them to make the potion of magic resistance. Apparently the drow invented that, according to the Forgotten Realms wiki. But there was almost no love between a parent and a child, merely one of mutual exploitation. Also from the Forgotten Realms wiki, which I'm like, how can a child exploit a parent? Apparently drows are just born vicious. I don't know.
They are, especially the drow. It is very much a, not only do I know that my child one day is most likely going to try and kill me because of the way that our society is, they're just vicious little fuckers to start with. That's why I went with half drow.
Only half bad.
Yeah, I wanted something. Well, and it's also why there's like rampant racism throughout the game. Like if you play as a drow or a half drow, everybody in Faerun's like, ew, get the fuck away from me. What are you doing here?
As they should, from my research. Gee.
Drow are not nice. It's as simple as that. But everybody... So the legend of Dritz is really what, like, pushed the drow to the forefront and why everybody fantasizes them and everything like that.
But he's, like, the one good one.
Yeah.
They're not all like that. They're almost... none of them are like that, you know? He's rare.
Dritz is very rare. All right. In a party banter with Karlak, Minthara will reveal that her first lover was a high priestess of the House Vandry, and she was tasked with assassinating her when her own house demanded it. She will say that she poisoned her, but stayed by her side as the poison did its job, whispering words of comfort as her lover slowly died.
That sucks. Like, no wonder she has trust issues. Okay, so second to last thing. Minthara is probably around 200 years old, so that makes her one of the oldest companions. This is given that she was allegedly around and an adult when Viconia de Vere was banished from Menzo Baranzin, which, if you don't remember who that is, Viconia was a character in, I think, the first and second Baldur's Gate games. She is someone you can see in Baldur's Gate 3 also as the High Priestess of the House of Grief, worshipping Shar. She is a Sharan. So it's been 120 years between Baldur's Gate 2 and Baldur's Gate 3, and Viconia was banished from Menzo Baranzin around 70 years before Baldur's Gate 2, if the Google math is mathing that I found. So that would make Minthara, like, maybe around 10 or 20 when Viconia was banished. So yeah, she's a little bit old, but not really, because she's still a drow.
So you also have to double that. If you're taking the standard of a 10-year-old or a 20-year-old in elfin standards, that's still like a literal toddler. So
yeah. Well, that was just based off of strict years that have been, like, counting the 120 years between Baldur's Gate 2 and 3, plus the 70 years before. It was like 71 years before Baldur's Gate 2 that Viconia was banished, which, like, the earliest reference put Minthara at like 10. So she either was a child or an adult. I'm not really sure, because she could have been older than that. It's not stated, like, when Minthara was born. So at the very minimum, she was alive when Viconia was banished, though. That's what we know. So at minimum, she's 200 something years old.
Got it. Okay, because if it was stated that Minthara was an adult when...
I think she said she was, so she's probably older, but it's really hard to tell without a definitive, like, year of her birth.
Agreed. And elven lore, and then I don't even know if drow age differently than, like, a standard wood elf would. So,
well,
fuck if I know, man.
Exactly, because as far as I'm aware, drow do not meditate in the same way. They don't get their ancestral memories like other elves do because of their curse.
It's only because drow don't dream. It's not because they don't go into the meditative thing of an elven. Yeah. I think that they still meditate.
But it's a curse, right, that prevents him from dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Is it only Loths? Oh, no, there's not like Lothsworn Drow and normal D&D, though, is there? I don't really know. Like, it's kind of, they're all just kind of like that.
No.
I mean, there's Sildaran Drows. Mm-hmm. Sildaran? I don't really know. Anyway, I don't know if it matters. Like, then there's like those albino Drow that aren't bad, apparently. There's just so much, like, I don't even know, mythology for all of the races.
I love how much D&D lore you're learning through all of this.
I mean, like, I already knew some. I have played D&D before, just only for like 8 months of my life. So a very small percentage of my life so far I spent on D&D. But I have learned a lot more just researching characters. I didn't know that much when I played because I played with a bad group of people who didn't really care.
Moving on. Spotify. Yay! We are at 183 ratings, and I appreciate every single one of you. The goal of hitting 200 is a huge feat for us, and we would absolutely love to hit that goal. So ask your friends, have them listen to our intro episode, and then they can rate the podcast. Steal your coworkers' phones, put us on there too. Get us to that 200 mark. Special shout outs, major love, big hearts, all the thank you to our special patrons, Toasty and Apollo, Becky and Daddy Bat Knight, Miss Theos and Muffiny Cake, Winifer and Evie from HR, and Lavellany. Big heart, major love, all the thank yous.
Yes. Thank you forever and always. I would raise an army and fight my own mother for you, a la Minthara. Okay, Jen, are you ready to show Minthara who she is through our eyes?
Before the Absolute, I lived a life of certainties. I knew that I was destined for greatness because I was born to it. I also knew that my inherited privilege came with a cost, that the bonds of fellowship and family could be broken by envy and ambition. I could not enjoy the taste of food for fear of poisoning, and I could not enjoy the company of lovers and friends because I feared they hid knives behind their smiles. In spite of the danger, I was happy. I knew myself, and I understood the world around me. Now, nothing is certain. Without Loth, without the Absolute, without my home, I do not know myself. But you do, I think. Show me myself through your eyes. Let me see what I am to you.
She joins her thoughts with yours. And you are as one. You share in her strength of mind and formidable will, but also the doubts that eat at her conviction. Those doubts cluster in swarms, and the thickest is around her sense of self. She pushes past, revealing the image of her you hold in your mind. What does she see? The cold shell of Minthara's mind melts away, and you are drawn into the heart of her. Warm, passionate, and dangerous.
I have never lacked confidence, but this conflict seems so much bigger than the two of us. It frightens me. I do not know if we will survive it, but whatever life remains to us, I would gladly spend it fighting at your side and lying with you at night.
Her mind touches yours, feather light and hesitant. A stark contrast to the confidence with which her thoughts intruded on yours in the past.
Tonight, there will be no voices, no orders, no gods. I belong only to you.
There we go. Now we actually get to romance the real Minthara, and not the Minthara controlled by the tadpole. Now, in my own personal opinion, do I still think that Minthara would have a very similar sex scene that she did in 1 if it were to happen in Act 3? Absolutely. But now we know that the woman we are falling for truly is the woman we are falling for, and not by the Absolute's control. Amanthara is an amalgamation of character traits, but she does not know the sum of her parts. She is used to being told who she is, as a paladin, as a noble daughter in Menza Baranzen, as a true soul. Now she wants you to tell her who she is. She says that the Absolute made her its weapon, and she was merely wielded. But even with her mind returned to her, she is seeking a master yet again. Now this is doubly ironic with a Dark Urge player character, because she will actively encourage you to seize your birthright. And, fucking spoiler alert, become Baal's next chosen. While she doesn't have much of an opinion on gods and their followers, and even she fears Orin, she believes that you have enough control to be different. Her conditioning for power has made her a bit love blind in this area.
It's so ironic, isn't it, how we look at her and we're like, she's so confident. She knows who she is, but she really doesn't. She is confident, but she also doesn't know who she is. It's a very weird dichotomy that she pulls off very well. Another very important thing to remember about Minthara is she is consistently evil, lawfully or neutrally. I tend to think Minthara, post-absolute mind control, is very lawful evil. We've already talked about a couple evil-inclined companions who, through friendship or love, have something of a redemption arc. Looking at you, Spawn Astarion. While Astarion's bid for power is a trauma response, Minthara is simply evil. This is the framework for her life. This is the way she moves through the world. It would have been all too easy to smooth her evilness away with player choice, to either give players the honor-bound duty to fix the bad character, or worse, to just make a murdering psychopath like Orin. Which, you know, Orin works, but she's so cartoonishly evil that there is no redeeming. It works for one character. I'm glad they didn't do it for two. Minthara is pragmatic, and all her actions make sense to her ruthless set of rules she lives by. This is why she can get along with good-aligned characters without being good herself. Why she can admire Karlak's bravery in the face of death, and respect Kethric Thorm and Gortash's leadership. She's genuinely evil, but also sympathetic and likable to even the most good-aligned player, like me.
Now, as a romance option, she has something known as the sugar and ice personality, also known as the hot and cold or sweet and sour. She is cold to the general public and even some of our companions, but fiercely loyal. To her lover, she has one of the most openly passionate and loving romance options. I mean, besides Karlak. Her kissing animations are aggressive, often grabbing the player by the neck and pulling them in close, or dipping them for a deep kiss. Even the large body male characters get dipped every once in a while. She's affectionate, but also domineering. It's honestly a shame that she isn't known as well by the fans, because she was locked out of so many playthroughs before they patched in the option to just simply knock her out. Now, she has the option to choose her future. Her free will being the thing that she values the most.
So, Minthara does not have a personal quest, but the quest to kill Orin is definitely personal to her. This obviously occurs in Act 3, And you should bring her with you when you kill Orin, because that is just good for Menthara's mental health. There unfortunately isn't much romance-specific Menthara interactions in the game overall. Much like Halsin, she doesn't have much content. Halsin also happens to be her foil, one of them. I think Karlek is also arguably a second, but minor foil. So Halsin and Menthara are both old elves loyal to their ways of life. Both have failed in their duties and are seeking a new purpose. And while Halsin is happy to share and go where his desires take him, Menthara is extremely monogamous because she's a walking trust issue. I mean, can you blame her? After her upbringing and the constant betrayals, danger, and backstabbing, I would have trust issues too. But Menthara also sees the opportunity for creating a world more suited to her and to you. In this next clip, you and Menthara are talking about how, with the artifact and the Netherstones, you could actually become gods yourselves. Yay.
Just to touch on her extreme monogamism, taking her to the Drow Twins is especially funny.
Yeah, but also don't. Right. If you're romancing her. Like, she's not about that.
She's not, but, like, you can take her there as, like, if you've romanced nobody or romanced somebody else. The fact that the male claims, like, Menzoberranzan tricks, she fucking lays into his ass, and it is so funny. Love it. But now, we need to talk about what would happen if you want to become a god yourself with Menthara.
When we first met, I could not have chosen that future. I could choose nothing. It is only because of you that I did not meet the same fate as Orin. Lost to madness and blood. If you had killed me when we first met, I would have been just one more casualty of your crusade against the Absolute. And nobody would remember me.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
That dialogue right there is why I'm so glad they finally did patch in a way to save her without killing the Grove. Because, you know, before, when that was the only option, it was like, how sad can I feel for you when I had to kill all these tieflings just to have you, you know? But even though that wasn't her fault. So, like, I'm glad that there's a way, especially considering that she's not herself during Act 1. So it's, like, even more dubious that you would have had to be that evil to get her when she isn't even that evil. Because she doesn't like needless killing like that. But yeah, so this audio clip makes me sad.
All right. There are various endings for Menthara, as well as with all of the companions. Unfortunately, it seems like much of her romance content, and even just her regular companion content, is still bugged. But it has worked for some people, and we know what is supposed to be there. So, the possible endings for Menthara are: die in Act 1. Die in Act 2. You save her in Act 2, and if she survived up to that point, and then in my own personal case, die randomly because you decide to go back to the Act 1 map, leaving her in the Act 2 map, and return to find her unretrievably dead, 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 as if I had killed her in Act 1. Like, even if I went and talked to Dead, it said that somebody raided her goblin camp and murdered her in camp, even though we were in the Sharan Temple of Act 2. I'm not bitter. I swear I'm not bitter. Or she can die at the end of the battle with Netherbrain. If you choose to become the Absolute and she is not romanced, she will become enthralled, just like everyone else. But if she is romanced, she will rule beside you as your little girlfriend. She does that if you choose to not be the Absolute as well, which you'll hear about in the next audio clip. If you are the Dark Urge, She may have a very angry dialogue where it sounds like she breaks up with you if you do not become Ball's chosen. She will scoff at you for suggesting that love is a greater power than anything, reminding you of all the various greater powers you have physically witnessed in your playthrough, finishing with, "If you believe love is a greater power than all that, you are stupider than I feared." However, this is apparently also a glitch. She isn't actually supposed to break up with you, but it sure as shit seems like it does since patch 6. It's honestly hard to tell what is supposed to happen and what isn't supposed to happen with the later stages of this romance right now. But hopefully things get smoothed out in the future. Here is what she will say at the very end of the game, before the epilogue party, but after the final battle.
"The world wakes to a new dawn, and we are here to greet it. Not as conquerors, but as saviors. No more gods or monsters, no devils or demons to manipulate our fate. We reclaimed our freedom, though everything was against us. What would you do with it?" "I would have preferred to claim the whole world when we had the chance, but Baldur's Gate is not a bad place to start. We can put the Gondians back to work, rebuild the Steel Watch, and march to Waterdeep with an unstoppable army at our back and a song of conquest on our lips. The Sword Coast will be our battlefield, and Baldur's Gate will be the founding city of a new dynasty. My name belongs to my mother, so our house will have a new name, your name, and the world will learn to fear it."
It sounds amazing. It's also, like, not exactly the happily ever after I would have envisioned for myself, but it certainly is a happily ever after for someone like Manthara. Like, that's just who she is. If you want to constantly wage war and try to come out on top, then she's your girl. She is loyal to a Okay, we already know from her sex scene that you're not always going to be on top. But if you want to be, like, on top societally, I saw your face, Jen. I saw that's what you were thinking. But yeah, she's going to help you get to the top of the pyramid of the social structure, if you will. I will say, I did see something that was, I think, beautiful. If there someone actually played as Karlach and romanced Minthara, which you would think, oh, that can't possibly work. They're on two opposite sides of the morality spectrum. But it works very well. Minthara actually cries in that scene if you tell her that you're not going to go back to Avernus, that you choose to die in Faerun. And she will say that she's going to take an army down to Avernus and hunt down and kill Zariel, because she is the last of your tormentors still living, I think is the quote. And she would never accept or understand your choice to die, but she will remain with you, to be with you by your side. And, like, oh, such a good delivery. You should look that video up if you haven't seen it. I think that is a good representation of what Minthara is to you as a romance option. She's so devout to you as a partner. It's not an equal partnership in a way. Like, she's there to bolster your strength, and she on her own is very strong, but she doesn't know that, which to me is a problem. That's the huge fatal flaw for Minthara, is that she has no self-confidence. She's confident. Like, she does know her capabilities, but she doesn't know her worth as a individual. She knows she could do whatever she wants, but she doesn't know that she is valuable just in and of herself, because she's never been taught that. That's not a framework she has to work with. And it obviously affects her romances. She's literally killed lovers in the past because that is what she was told to do in service to her house.
whatever purpose she's aligned herself with, she will sacrifice herself on the altar. And that's just not going to fly with me for a long-term relationship. But I love Minthara. Like, if she got some therapy and wanted to kindle a romance with me after she, you know, learned her value on her own, yeah, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Therapy in Faerun needs to be a thing. I can think of, well, pretty much all of them need it. I think that therapy is healthy for everyone. Yeah. For me, I love Minthara, and I need her to actually fucking survive one of my playthroughs. Unfortunately, it's going to take playthrough number 6 to actually keep her alive. I don't know what has happened. Either, you know, I killed her the first 2 playthroughs, my 3rd playthrough, she glitch died. And then my 4th one, I was like, I tried to keep her knocked out when she was hostile, and it still didn't work for me. So I've tried. I really have. It just hasn't worked. So I love her, but it's also not for me. The scene, remember the scene with Astarion where you can tell him you obviously don't need a lover, you need a friend? I think the same thing applies to Minthara as well, because I need to know that you know who you are before I'm in your life. I mean, me as Jen is a pretty imposing personality type to begin with, but also that's how my Tavs are as well. And I know that main player character energy is a big thing. Literally everybody has to fucking listen to me in this game, and you're gonna end up doing what I tell you to do. But if I fail a persuasion check, if I fail a roll, or if I pick an option where you straight up don't agree with me, I need to know that you're gonna have the backbone to do what is right for you. Shadowheart, in the end, will always side with Saloon. All those little decisions that we make where we allow the character to make their own decision is generally what is best for them. If I were to let Minthara make her own decisions, I think she'd be paralyzed. I don't think she'd be able to make her own decisions. So I can't be with somebody who doesn't have conviction in themselves. So I want you in my party, and I wouldn't mind spending a night in bed with you. But Minthara, I don't know if I have a place in my heart for you.
It reminds me of Morrigan from Dragon Age Origins, when we said, I think female friendship is what she needs more than a romance. I think that's what would be the most healing for Minthara as well, specifically a female friendship over a romance. I will say, like, my sister was supposed to be here again because no one wanted to, you know, be in here for an interview for Minthara, but my sister loves Minthara, and she put notes in here that she wanted us to mention how funny she is, and I agree, Minthara is, like, a sleeper agent when it comes to humor. She just gets you when you least expect it. So, like, for one, my sister put some examples in here for that. I just wanted to mention this because it's great. If you haven't had Minthara in your party, either look these videos up or recruit her in a playthrough. But, like, apparently, because she hates Gale, because wizards just die young all the time. So if Gale dies in battle when Minthara's in the party, she'll say, "The wizard has fallen, typical," which is just so funny.
If Scratch dies and Minthara throws the ball, she says, "Withers, be a good skeleton and fetch that ball." Are you kidding? So cute.
I know. It's like if you have her in your party for the circus in Act 3, and you can, you know, during Dribbles the Clown's cutscene, you can ask her to tell a joke about the man who married a drider, which I think already was funny because you're like, in this universe, Minthara's already told this joke at camp because you're referencing, hey, tell that joke again. And she'll say, "It was a wonderful webbing." Like the most deadpan. It's so good.
Oh, should we just go through all these because they're so good? Okay. All right. walking around the Shadowlands with her and Astarion, Minthara. The shadows have lingered here so long, the land itself is corroded. A most persistent curse.
Astarion says, I think I know a thing or two about persistent curses, thank you.
Minthara. The rashes and sores you may have contracted over your decades of philandering are not the kind of curses that concern me.
She just cuts so deep and so skillfully. Ruined. Why would you say that to Astarion? Nothing is safe from Minthara.
Vampires can't contract everyone. Diseases.
Yeah.
Sorry, you twat.
Yeah, I know, but it's still funny. She's so, like, cunning and just, she just is shrewd. You know, she knows everyone instantly. And I know that comes from the way she grew up, but it's just funny because she just has the most astute observations about everybody. So, like, another Astarion Minthi banter that my sister put in here. Minthara goes to Astarion. Half the men of Menza Berenzin are pleasure servants, weaklings whose beauty is their only redeeming quality. You would fit right in with them, Astarion.
You think I'm beautiful? Oh, Minthara.
It's so funny. I love this next one. Do you want to be Minthara or Gale for it?
I can be Gale.
Okay. Do you have elder siblings, wizard?
You're about to say something awful, aren't you?
In Menzo Berenzin, after a house has two sons, every subsequent male-born child is slaughtered at birth, as it is useless, even for breeding. You have the aura of a third child about you. That's so good. Cruel, Minthara. Love it.
I believe I need to play Minthara on this one.
Yes.
Minthara giving Lazel bedroom tips. A few pointers, Lazel. I heard you and your lover locked in combat, but the test you set was not rigorous enough. Next time, tie them to the ground and do not release them until you are both satisfied.
And then Lazel apparently says, you have given me ideas. Gross. No, thank you. And then Yurikat in chat said that she heard, if you choose the ending where Gale blows himself up, she'll say something like, he realized he was the least of us and he sacrificed himself so his betters may live.
What the fuck, Minthara?
I know. But, like, that's the pragmatic evil that she is, you know? Like, it would make sense to her to send one person up with a literal bomb in his chest to kill the Netherbrain rather than all of you guys go up and risk yourselves. I mean, that it doesn't make sense to my morality and my idea of reality, but it does to her.
I've never used Atomic Gale.
I would never. I would never, but Minthara would, you know?
Yeah, I think we've kind of talked everything, Minthara, that there is tonight. Muffiny, thank you, darling, for sending these in. I had seen the third child clip on YouTube while just scrolling through my own reels and whatnot. But some of these other ones, definitely, I've never come across. So very much appreciate. Thank you. Thank you. Do we have any final thoughts on Minthi?
I need her to get some therapy. The thing with Minthara, my final thought actually is, everyone in this game needs therapy, but some of them realize it, and Minthara doesn't, which is my biggest problem with her. She doesn't realize what she needs, you know? She needs help. Astarion for sure knows he's traumatized. You know, he's very, very self-aware, which is something that I find very attractive about him. That's why I don't find Minthara attractive in the same way, is because she is not self-aware at all. Like, she is to the point of that she knows she's afraid and stuff, but she has no idea what she needs to do to fix that. And that's why I think she needs a good friend to be like, girl, talk to somebody.
I think that's everything that we have to say. Now, if you like what you're hearing, please be sure to leave a review on iTunes or on Spotify and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can now find me on the Cyberpunk Lorecast with my co-host, Toasty, where we explore the foundations of the past, the state of Night City today, and the news of the future for all things cyberpunk. Check out Scyther Audio's newest fan-made production, The Avengers, the audio drama, where you can find me and several of our podcasting friends. You can also reach out to me in our Two Girls One Ship channel on the Robots Radio Discord. And come give us a follow on all the social medias and on patreon.com/twogirlsoneship. Our theme music was composed by the ever-talented Pipeman Studios, and our artwork was designed by the esteemed Let's Not. Links are in the description.
I am also on the Robots Radio Discord and on our own Two Girls One Ship Discord server, where we nerd out on all our favorite CGI significant others. Be sure to check out our live streams on Twitch on Fridays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Our podcast episodes release on Mondays because you need at least one good thing on a Monday.
So thanks for listening, and remember,
suns are useless, and beauty is in the eye of the controller.
Are you a fan of Elden Ring? Are you confused about the lore as pretty much everyone else? We've got you covered. Check out the Elden Archives, a lore podcast that helps to explain every little confusing detail about the lands between. Things like what exactly happened on the Night of the Black Knives, or what we really know about characters like Mikala. Just like the show you're listening to now, we're on the Robots Radio Network, so you know it'll be good. Wondering how to find the show? Easy. Either go to robotsradio.net or search Elden Archives on whatever podcatcher you're using right now. Bookmark the show for later, and we'll see you in the lands between. Again, that's The Elden Archives, FromSoft Lorecast, available everywhere.